there, Green Future Growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get enter to get listening to your first audiobook today. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. So Patty Ann, I like to start the show by talking about your first gardening experience. So will you just tell us a little bit about, were you a kid or an adult, or, you know, how big was it? Who were you with? Just a little bit to introduce us to your first gardening experience.
Well, my first experience in the garden was in Maine, and this we lived in a beautiful old Maine farmhouse. And my mother had a garden. She's always had a garden, and there was a big garden in the back. And for some reason, I just remember that that garden as my first experience in it. I was, like I said, I was about 8 years old. And
do you remember anything you planted in particular, or just working with her, or something?
No,
it's
just with her. I was just in there, just watching her. I think I didn't. She was always putting vegetables up. But at that point, I didn't have a history of gardening behind me. I'm just in it. I'm in it, and I'm surrounded by, you know, the stuff, you know, the green, the growth, but not really in it, just enjoying, you know, liking the smell. And
like just hanging out and playing and not really digging beds.
No,
and
not doing that
doing
yet.
The work yet. Okay, so then my next question, we kind of talk about what is earth-friendly or organic gardening mean to you? You know, everybody's kind of got a different vision of what that means. So what does that mean to you?
Well, in my experience, my husband and I, Bruce and I, have we don't use chemicals, for one thing. That's just not part of what we do. We've always got a compost pile going. You know, when we first moved to Montana, we were looking for ways to make a living here. That was 30 years ago. And so for one thing, I thought we could sell worms to fishermen, you know, but we needed to get the worms. So we ordered a pound or two of red wigglers from Texas. Wet red wigglers are not the best worms to use for fishing, really.
And they're not?
Not really.
There's a certain kind of worm?
Earthworms are juicier and meatier and bigger, you know, and so an important part of our garden are the worms, and we've got millions and billions of red wigglers, and so they move from compost pile to compost pile, and Bruce will take the truckloads out and get cow manure and horse manure and bring it back, and we go to the dump and get bales of straw that people have thrown out. They're cleaning up their barns, so, you know, we just haul them home, and I use that to mulch my gardens. As I plant, I mulch every row with straw or hay, and all of that gets it breaks down over the season, and we till it in, and it ends up in the compost pile as well. All our vegetable scraps from the house, we've got a bucket under the sink, you know, and that's just automatically part of the deal, and it always has been. For us, we've had gardens. We could go back about the first gardening experience.
Okay.
The one that I spoke about was my first. That's my first visual, my first physical. But my first experience of gardening on my own was when I was out and about when I was married and I had a baby and we lived in Florida. And that was really when I really experienced the soil, the dirt, and being responsible for it and falling in love with it. I remember as a teenager we were in Connecticut then, and Mom and Dad always had a gigantic garden out back, and you know, we'd work in it then, you know, back east our Japanese beetles, you have to pick them off the plants. There are just different issues there, but
No,
I
wait, let me just, when you were a teenager, when did you move to Florida? After you got married, or when, with your parent? Are you still in Maine, or?
Yeah, sorry, I'm jumping all over the
No,
place.
that's great.
We moved to Connecticut. From Maine, we moved to Connecticut. And in Connecticut, we always had a garden also. My mother always had either of it, also both a vegetable garden and the flower beds. Our house was just always, our yard was always filled with roses and, oh, just, you know, flowering fruit trees. And, but in Connecticut, so this is probably the progress is in Connecticut. I remember begrudgingly having to work in the garden.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't want to do that. And as a teenager, I did not want to do that. And when I got a car, you know, my mother still talks about this. She remembers the day that I walked out, that both of them are working, you know, they're working so hard in the garden. And I walk out as a teenager and just say, well, that looks nice, you know, and then turned around and drove away. You know, it's like, I didn't want, it just wasn't part of it. So then when I got married and moved to Florida, which I really hated because it was so different from New England.
Right.
And the soil is so different too, but that's where,
So that's where the beetles were that you had to pick off?
No, the beetles were back in Connecticut.
Oh, they were.
In parents' garden. Yeah. But in Florida, I lived in a little duplex and there were little gardens already started there, but you could grow pineapples,
Ooh.
Pineapple plants, and they look like a yucca.
Uh-huh.
Look like that, but pointed and sharp.
Are they really tall?
No, these were low. These weren't, they were, I don't know if they were going to become the tree. I'm not really sure. I don't sit there long enough, but I had pineapple. I didn't harvest it, of course, but I had the plants that I tended and the Wandering Jew, and that just grows wild down there, crazy wild all over the place. But that also was my pride and joy. I was working in that garden. I had it. My son, Chris, this was 1970, and my son was born in 71. And so we just, that's where I really began my love affair with the garden.
So what inspired you to use like organic techniques, or how did you learn how to do that? Did somebody teach you? Your mom gardened organically, or was it something you got into later?
You know, my mother, again, I wasn't aware. They never used fertilizer or chemical fertilizers. You know, when I was growing up, we brought the compost out. I don't know where Dad got the fertilizer, the manure. I don't know. We had a compost pile there. I think it was a very much simpler process than how Bruce and I do it. But that's just, you know, we've always been kind of organic people. You know, we I don't know, it just wasn't anything that we needed to do or to investigate or to, you know, we just, both of us, Bruce's family, Bruce's grandfather was a great gardener also. So we both have the same background as far as that goes. Similar interest and love of the land and tending and planting things. So the organic part just is an organic process for us, is that there was not a consideration to do it any other way.
That's what I like to hear. And that's what a lot of people say, that we just all kind of grew up that way. Like, I always remember having a compost bucket on my mom's kitchen counter, and just, I always thought everybody did. It just seemed so natural to me. I couldn't imagine. I remember going to college and putting the little milk carton on the counter and my roommates being like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
Well, didn't you grow up with one of these? And
yeah.
I just,
well, our parents grew up in the Depression, so
right.
That's what they did anyway, and they saved everything. You know, I still wash my aluminum foil, and people say, what are you doing? You know?
Oh, me too.
So, but, you know, and, I, you know, so it's part of, it's just part of how we have always done it.
Mm-hmm. And how we live, I think. But, you know, either a lot of people, like, recycling is just a part of your life. If you're recycling, you can't stand to see a can go in the garbage or a plastic go in the garbage. And I always feel guilty if I even do throw something away.
Oh, I do.
If it's too dirty to put in the recycling, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, where's this going? You know, years ago, we didn't really think about, where is this going?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like, where's this going?
I just saw there's a really good video. This woman was speaking at this Bioneers conference, and she has a website called The Story of Stuff. And she does great videos on the stories of garbage and where it goes and, you know, the processes that really helps you bring it full circle for people to see where they're going.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your garden this summer. Tell us about something that grew really well this summer.
Well, this summer, my cabbages grew fantastically, beautifully well, and the kale did also.
Okay. How about, is there something that didn't do so good or something you would do different next year?
Yeah. Bruce and I, we have two gardens. We have vegetable gardens, you know, and then of course I've got the flower beds here that I've worked on for 25 years. But the vegetable gardens, we have the one here at home down by the lake, and we just resurrected that. This is our third year. We planted it when we started building the house in 85. And then in 96, when all that, you know, when we had so much snow and rain, do you remember that winter? Mm-hmm. We live on a lake, and the garden was down too close to the lake.
Really?
So the lake came up and covered the garden like in 2 weeks. We lost the garden that we'd worked in for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
We lost our compost. We lost all our perennials that were down there. It was really traumatic. Because down there, I mean, it gets full sun all day. The soil, it was really fabulous. You know, it was old lake soil. Mm-hmm. So
the lake rose so much that everything was just covered in water?
Yeah.
And then it didn't go back down? It stayed through the summer?
Yeah, it went back down. It went back down after a few years, and it's been down for quite a while. So I've been really missing my vegetable garden here at home. I tried to grow the vegetable. I tried to move my vegetable bed, my vegetable garden, up back here in back of the house where all the flowers are. But we have huge canopies here of gigantic trees in back, and vegetables they just weren't getting enough sun at all. So it never worked up here. It was very frustrating. So we just resurrected this one, say, 3 years ago, but it took a while to rebuild the soil.
Right.
So Bruce brought in truckloads and truckloads of sand and manure, built the compost piles at various spots in the garden to build it up and until, you know, for when we were ready to use it. So this year, the garden was, we planted it last year, and it was just extraordinary. My grandson, I don't know, do you want these stories?
Sure, yeah.
The grandchildren always work in the gardens with us.
Uh-huh.
So I gave Mason, he was seven last year.
Uh-huh.
So I gave him an envelope of sunflower seeds to plant. And I had already planted some rows. So I said, if you take a seed and you take one or two seeds and put it at the beginning and the end of each row.
Uh-huh.
So he says to me, Nana, I know how to plant. I've been gardening all my life. So I didn't need to tell him, you know, where to put those seeds.
Excellent.
But what he did was he took the whole packet. He did put some seeds at the beginning and end of some of those rows. But what he did is he kind of just dumped it in one spot. So we had really a virtual jungle of sunflower seeds that were at least 15 feet tall.
Because my goodness.
The soil was so fabulous, and the heads were so heavy, they were just bending over. But that was his little sunflower jungle.
Aww.
Oh, it was really precious. So because of that, the garden last year didn't really do very well because there was no sun in it there either, because the sunflower jungle. But I couldn't do anything with that because I didn't want to. I mean, it's his pride and joy, and it was really beautiful.
I'll bet. Maybe if you have a picture, we could put it in the show notes.
Oh, we do.
That would be super cute.
Oh, sure.
And that's a big part of, I know Mike and I talk a lot about, we want to educate kids and getting kids in the garden with parents and teaching them so it keeps going on. So I think that's a perfect story. Okay, so my next question, it talks about like harvesting food and eating your vegetables or fruit or any, because that's always my hardest thing, is it seems like everything comes up at the same time and then I'm inundated with lettuce or, you know, whatever's ripe at the time, and I can never keep up. So do you have any secrets for making food last or harvesting?
No, the harvesting, because there is so much, and like I said, we have two gardens. We have the one here and we have the one in town that we were given on loan. And there is so much that we just share it, you know, and even at harvest time, one person can't take, you can't do it all at once. I mean, you want it to be as fresh as possible, but when you've got buckets and buckets and buckets of kale that need to happen, I mean, I just also I'll do, say, the kale. I just do that. You can't do it all at once, so you just do it in a pro as a process. I have the dehydrators going, you know, night and day.
Oh, you do.
Oh yeah, night and
So do
day.
you make like kale chips?
Yeah, oh yeah, I do. I make, and I have the best recipe in the whole world. I make the best kale chips in the whole world.
You do? Would you share that with us?
I
Like, I could put
do.
it in the show notes so people can learn how to make kale chips the best way. And what do you do? Like, what's your secret? Do you want to share?
Yeah. Well, first, somebody told me about it, and they put it in the oven. Well, I tried that, and they were not very good. But I have two dehydrators with, like, you know, 12 shelves in each one. So when I take the kale, and it's a major production, as you know, because the garden is so clean, I don't wash it. I mean, it's so clean, we don't have bugs or anything like that. So I just break them off and bring, I have those big rubber buckets with handles on them. So I'll fill one or two of them. One, I think, will fill two dehydrators, but I cut the spines off of each piece and put it in a that back into another bucket empty. So when all the spines are cut off and I have a bucket full of the rest of that leaf, then I'll pour a little bit of olive oil on it and mix it up, let it set for a little while, let it set and kind of absorb into it, and you just mix it with your hands and fluff it up, and it might take an hour or two for the oil to really make its way through everything. And then I have Himalayan salt or Hawaiian salt, so I grind that into it, and that's just you just do it by, you know, you just do it. There's no measurement. And then I also at Costco buy the 21 organic spice mix, and I sprinkle that in very liberally. And again, I mix it all up with my hands, let it set for a little bit, and it's all sticking to all the leaves. And then I layer it in the dehydrator, and then I just let it go. I layer it in there, just as thick as it'll work, and it doesn't take long. Maybe it just does. You just keep checking it. Maybe 4 or 5 hours, and then, you know, it's crispy. It comes out just chips. They're just chips, and you know, and my kids and grandkids eat them by the bucketful. They eat them. They'll eat them all up. And then to preserve it, I just put them. I take them out, let them cool, and then put them in plastic Ziploc, double Ziploc freezer bags, and they stay crispy there for forever. Now they won't, you know, the oil. Well, if you have them left over, if you store it, the oil will come off, you know, but, you know, and kind of go into the bottom of the bag. But if the chips get soft, which sometimes they can, you just put them back in the dehydrator to crisp them up and put them in a bowl, and they disappear. Yeah, they're delicious, and it's really pretty easy. But that's how I did most of the kale. I do make a cream of kale soup. I have a wonderful recipe for cream of broccoli, but I just substitute the kale for the broccoli, and that is just fabulous. I don't know that recipe off the top of my head, but
That's perfect. Okay, and then how about a favorite tool? Like, if you had to move and you could only take one tool with me, what's your go-to tool that you couldn't live without?
it's my shovel. You know, I don't use a big shovel. I use a small headed shovel. And this is my third. I have this. I've worn out three shovels.
Really?
Yeah. So I have the handles break, or they just fall out. So I have my, yeah, it's my shovel.
How about a favorite? Do you use the internet at all to research or do any gardening, any kind of favorite internet resource?
No, I don't really.
Okay. And how about like a book or a magazine or a book or any kind of reading material?
Yeah, you know, I've always said the Rodale book, How to Grow Vegetables and Fruits by the Organic Method. I mean, that's just a Bible. I've got the Self-Sufficient Gardener, John Seymour. Then I've got Growing Vegetables, Big Yield, Small Space Way, Duane Newcomb. And of course, the Sunset Western Garden book. You know, I go there for if I need to.
Okay, cool.
For research.
Well, that's pretty much everything. Thank you so much for being my guest today and sharing your knowledge. I know people are going to get lots of valuable tips out of this interview and things that they can try in their gardens. And I really appreciate you coming on today and talking to me.
Well, I appreciate being here. Thank you. Could I add one thing, Jackie?
Yes, absolutely. You bet.
There's something else that I think that's very important if other people are interested in this, is making sauerkraut from our cabbages with whey.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I think it's really important. It's really important for it enhances our digestibility. You know, this is the way the sailors, this is the kind of sauerkraut the sailors made to last. It doesn't go bad. You know, you make it with, you grind up the sauerkraut and then you add whey and salt and caraway seeds and then you let it work. You can put it into the jars. It works so fast it'll blow the tops of the jars right off. But it's very important for our digestion. It's like a probiotic kind of thing. It's a fermented vegetable. You know, a lot of other countries just have this in their diet. They eat a little bit of it every day. So, you know, people might want to look into that. I would encourage them to use their own cabbages and vegetables to make fermented vegetables.
All right, so I'm just going to dig a little deeper here. So you said you had a really good cabbage crop this year, which I'm a little curious about. Like, do you have any tips? Because we always have a hard time with bugs in our cabbage. And we did get a really good cabbage this year, but I know other years we've really struggled.
No, you know, I think the secret for me, the secret is when the cabbage is ready to take it.
Oh, okay.
Don't let it wait because, you know, the moths will get in there. Mm-hmm. You know, and they'll get in there and do their business. The worms get in there. So when the cabbage is ready, take it. Don't wait for it to get bigger. You know, mine get as big as a bowling ball. Okay. But, you know, they don't need to get that big because if they grow too fast, like we had too much nitrogen in our garden this year. So everything really grew too fast. Not everything, but some of the things just grew too fast. And cabbage was one of them. So that's why I know to harvest. I should have harvested some of these before I did. I should have harvested when I saw they were all ready. None had split, none, they were ready. So I think that's a tip for me. And then I bring them in, cut them up, chop them, put them in the Cuisinart. I have a big crock pot that sits up on the counter. I originally had put them in the jars as the instructions say, the recipe says to do. It says to leave an inch in the top of the jars, but this works so fast that really the tops of the jars were bulging off. If I hadn't opened them, they would have blown. And they just did kind of blow when I opened those. So now I put it in the crock, the sauerkraut, the whey. Whey is what you get when you strain the yogurt. You get the Greek yogurt and you let it drip for, you know, if overnight. And that's the whey, the juice that comes off that liquid is the whey. So you measure it and you don't need very much. And then put the salt in and the caraway seeds. Let it work on the counter. Put a cover on it. Chop it up. You pound it with a metal or a, not metal a wooden mallet. A wooden.
You wait. Spoon. What do you pound? The salt.
The cabbage. Once it's worked up in the Cuisinart, you know, okay. Measured out. You put it all in there and then you pound it. You put the whey in there and the salt and the caraway and you pound it and that kind of just gets it working. You know, you wake it up and it gets it working together. And then you cover it, let it work overnight, stir it again, let it work.
And do you have to add water or anything to it?
No, don't add anything. It's only the cabbage, whey, salt, a little bit of salt and caraway seeds. I mean, I can give you that recipe. Okay. And I can give you the book that's in too. People might want this book anyhow.
Okay.
It's called Nourishing Traditions.
Okay.
It's by Sally Fallon.
Okay.
But the recipe, I have it here. It's if do you want it?
Sure.
Yeah, it's this recipe makes 1 quart. It's 1 medium cabbage, cored and shredded, 1 tablespoon caraway seeds, 1 tablespoon sea salt, and 4 tablespoons of whey. So again, you just put all that together, and I don't make 1 quart at a time. I put it all, you know, I make a big batch.
Oh, you do? Okay.
And then, to stop it from working, because it's going to keep working, you need to move it to the basement or to the root cellar where it's cool, and then it will stop.
And that's after you put them in the jars or before?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So I've taken it from the crock pot after it's worked for a couple days.
Uh-huh.
Then I put it into the jars, seal it. You don't process it or anything. You just seal it and then move it to the basement. No, there's no processing needed. There's your sauerkraut just like that. And it's delicious. And I eat a little bit every day. And I think it helps with my digestion. I feel better when I'm eating it. So.
Well, and also, when I worked at the Whole Foods store, I knew there were a lot of people that would come in and buy organic cabbage because they said that was one of the biggest ways to prevent cancer, was eating organic cabbage every day. So I'll bet that helps there, too.
Yeah, I think so.
So, Penny Ann, let's just introduce yourself to the audience a little and tell us a little bit about... you were telling me that the garden has been kind of like your medicine, and go ahead.
The garden has been my medicine. It saved my life, my mental life, my physical. I have a perennial garden out here that I started 25 years ago when my daughter was 4. There was nothing here. It was just the woods. It's Montana woods, just a yard that had never been developed at all. So I'd go out, and when I would be, the garden became my medicine. When I was frustrated or I had a sense of no control in my life. And we all do at different times for various reasons, but...
Sure.
Mine was really, there were a lot of things going on here.
Sure.
You know, we just moved to Montana. There was no money. You know, we were just all kinds of things. But I had a sense of no control. But what I learned was that I did have control in the garden. And not that you control what a garden does, but you can control your shovel. I could control my shovel. So I... would go out and I started digging at the back door here. So I dig and plant, and these were flowers, not vegetables. The vegetable garden came later. But the flowers, I'd plant, and then the deer would come in and eat, and I'd plant again, and the deer would come. And I've got 3/4 of an acre out here of perennial beds, and I've got walkways and stoneways and sawdust on all the paths, and I've got little places to sit and bird baths and a fountain, and you know, there's the teepee that it goes to, and we've got a seating area. We've got a lot of sitting areas out there. We've got a lot of places where you could hide. You know, there are lilacs that have grown up over the years, so you could hide in the garden. Nobody really knows where you find you. It's really a retreat place. It's become a retreat for me.
Aww.
But it is, and people sense that when they come through the gate, that this is the peace garden. There's peace here, but it is absolutely. And the garden, the shovel,
like a sanctuary,
it is a symbolic thing for me. You asked before, what tool would you take? I would take, my shovel, because the shovel transformed my frustrations and anger and anxiety and sense of of no control. It transformed all that into, it was like a lightning rod. That's what I see, is my shovel is a lightning rod, where it transformed all that negative energy into something beautiful. And I did not know that was happening when I was doing that. I had no idea that was what was happening. And then at one point, maybe 8 years. Oh, I don't know if how late it, how far away it was, but we had problems with some dogs in the neighborhood, so we put a fence up. There was no fence before that. You can't be a gardener without a fence around here. So we put a fence up the whole way around our, we have two lots here, so we put elk high fence around the whole thing and picket fence on one part. And when we did that, that spring, that first spring, everything bloomed. And that was the first time in all of those years that I'd been gardening that everything bloomed, because the deer came in and ate it every time. But I just kept doing it anyway, because gardeners are kind of crazy about that, like that.
Right.
So we were both just dumbstruck. We were awestruck when all of that work finally was able to manifest into what it was, what it had been becoming all along. But I never saw that until we put the fence up and everything was allowed to live, you know, allowed to grow and blossom. Oh my God. And if anyone comes now, even now in June, you know, this is a June garden. It's just the most magical, beautiful, uplifting, loving, I don't know, just beautiful place to be. So,
place to be. So, can you just, in case there's some listeners that don't know, kind of just explain the difference between
annuals. I mean, you have to plant them every year, every spring. You know, you have to do all that work. And it's like, I never was into annuals. Bruce loves annuals because they're so colorful. You know, petunias and pansies and those things. They're just so beautiful all the time. Hanging baskets and that kind of thing. But, I mean, I don't even do that. The perennials come up every year. I mean, just come, they come, they're, you put them in and then they go for it. You know, they live their life there, and and after a while you need to dig them up and spread them out, cut them in quarters or spread them out. And I mean, one plant can create 100 little ones. So, I mean, it's incredible. And if you don't keep up with that, which I, because of my life, I have not been able to keep up with what is out there. You know, it's like I've created this monster. But oh, well, I got them from Margaret Turning. Margaret had the most beautiful garden down at the end here of our road. And when she was moving, she dug up her perennials and brought them here to me. And the first thing she brought in here was a bleeding heart, and it was as big as an elephant, you know? And so I just cut it into quarters and just put it somewhere. I didn't know where the best place for anything to go to be. I just put things where I sense they would like to be and then see if they like it there. And, you know, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, and that's obvious. I don't have anything in my garden that takes any kind of special care.
That's the other nice thing about perennials. I find that they're much more likely to grow with the season, and you know, they do better with the whatever rain you get that year.
Yeah, perennials are, I think, the best for me. They're the best because you put this one in here and then you just keep adding to it. You don't have to go back and do it again.
Absolutely.
I don't like doing that. And then when these need to be the ones at the beginning where I began 25 years ago, now I have divided them, and the ones that were started here are still here, but their offspring now are over in the other part of the garden. Now they're over by the swing, or they're over by the teepee, or they're over by the sitting area. So the offspring, they're all here, but they all, they're all in just different spots now. And my grandmother Barclay, when I started gardening, sent me an envelope full of columbine seeds from Pennsylvania. So I just spread them. I just put them out there.
Ooh.
And now the columbine have just spread themselves. And I have every color of the rainbow columbine. I have blue and white and yellow and red and scarlet and, of course, pinks. And I have doubles and pink and white. And I, you know, it's just, That was, and I have a piece of my grandmother. My grandmother's in the garden with, Margaret is here in the garden with me. Our animals are in the garden with us, you know, that's there where they've been buried. There are just many, there's so many stories about our garden. But the, another thing about the garden is that it symbolizes how we, I think it symbolizes people, because each flower could represent a person or a kind of person or a culture, and how we can grow together and be beautiful. You know, this this plant can represent this family even. Do you know what I mean? The garden is, I mean, you certainly, you can write a million books about the garden, but it's nice to share those stories.
Absolutely. And just, I love your garden, and the garden at the church is just at St. Michael's is just astounding. And every time you drive by there, you can always
see
it.
Yeah, we do. And I'll tell you about that garden briefly.
There was no garden there, right?
You know, 12 years ago, there was no garden. There was those trees weren't there either. There was just that sumac or whatever that bush was in the corner. And so, we had a water problem in the basement, and they put a French drain in, and to do that they dug up the hillside there, so it was just left a mess. So Bruce and I brought in the flowers from our garden here to there. I wanted to have a perennial bed there also, and that first spring every one of those plants that we planted bloomed like it had been there for 100 years, you know. But yeah, it in here because of our
really
the soil, you know, it's clay. All of this is clay. So every bit of it had to be dug out.
The soil?
And then replaced with topsoil and right. peat and compost and all of that, which we did. I mean, I dug all of this out by hand with that shovel, one shovel full at a time, and then rebuilt it and then planted. But at the garden, that soil is like loam and silt. It's just you can almost run your hands in it. It's so beautiful. And the conditions here, it's very dry. We're under the canopy of the trees. So the conditions here were very different. And there, they're perfect. You have sun all day. You have the water is there. We could water it. Yeah, that garden is just spectacular. Mm-hmm. And the thing about perennials also is that when their time is done, you let them go to seed, whatever you want to go to seed, and then you just cut it back. You cut it off. You know, and that's all. Rake it up, clean it up, take it away. But the perennials are easy to take care of that way. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for sharing that and sharing all of your knowledge today. It's been so helpful.
Yeah. Oh, goodbye. Goodbye, Jackie. This is so fun.
Vase life. No flower preservative is needed. This is one of the many, many fantastic tricks that Erin Bazinkian has in her book Floret Farms Cut Flower Garden Grow Harvest and Arrange Stunning Seasonal Blooms. She's got vase life tricks for every flower in there and tons of just other fantastic advice for growing flowers, whether you're a market farmer or you just want your backyard to bloom. So you can get this book or any of the other books that have been recommended on our show by going to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com. Go to the recommended books page and support the Organic Gardener Podcast while getting yourself a great read. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener Podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.